Started the tour away in North West London Friday. Second day of Hanukkah, Kof Bov Kislev, 27th of December. Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Liebman Shlita. Parsha theme.
We all know what Hanukkah is about. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos. We're brought up that way. My Hanukkah, what happened? Well, we came to the Beis HaMikdash and there was only one little flask of oil left because somebody should Kohen Gadol. And it could only last for one day. And then a Ness happened and it lasted for 8 days. Gewaldic, amazing Ness. And that's what we do when we light the menorah. Taka Pursumin Nissan, when we farasim that Ness. Which raises a kasha that must strike a yid at least three times a day over Hanukkah. When it comes to Alan Nissan, and we talk about the Hidah to the Rebbeinu Shleilam. We thank the Rebbeinu Shleilam for the Chuas, for the Milchamas, for the Purkan, for the Nisim. And we go through the details. Rav Tos Rivam, Dan Tos Dinam, Sati Geber, Miat Chaloshim. And then we say, V'acha came bo, Bona Cholid Vir Beisecho. Then we came, your children, Rebbeinu Shleilam, came into the Dvir, into the Kodesh Kodeshim. And we're getting there, right? We're just getting, you can feel the build-up, and everything's cleared up, and now we're going to get to the menorah mistama, and it says v'idliku neiris b'chatzris kodshecho, and you'd expect, and then there was a flask of oil and it couldn't only last one day, and it didn't last if it nothing, just complete omission of the Nes Hashem. All it talks about is the fact we've got this mitzvah back in Eris, the kavod shmonis mechanukah edul in salal v'shem chagod. Apella. So on the one hand, that's what's strange about Alanism, there's no mention of the Nes HaShemen, but you could equally ask on the Gemara. The Gemara says, my Chanukah, and only refers to the Nes HaShemen, with absolutely no reference to the Nes of the Melchomas and the Yeshuas. The simple answer is that there's two different sugyas on Chanukah. There's a sugya of Pursumin Nissa, and there's a sugya of Hoidah, and they're actually different. Pursumin Nissa means showing everyone the incredible Ness. Now we know there's two types of Nissim, right? There's a Ness Nigla and a Ness Nista. A Ness Nigla, a revealed Ness, is when Hashem shows us that he'll actually change the laws of nature for us. Something that not is difficult, something not unlikely, something that cannot happen, happens. That's a Ness Nigla. And then there's a Ness Nista that just is so remarkably unlikely that the fact that it actually happens astonishes us, and we call it miraculous. It's also a Ness, but not the same level of Ness. So maybe Pursume Nissa is only on a Ness Nigla, or primarily on a Ness Nigla, if somebody has a kasha from Megillah, that's on Ness Nigla. And therefore, when it comes to the mitzvah Pursume Nissa, which is what the Gemara in Shabbos is talking about, why do we light the Neiris as Pursume Nissa? The answer is the Neiris. The Milchamois, yeah, they were Nissim, but not the same level of Ness, so there's no Pursume Nissa on that. In Shmuel Esra, when we're saying Alan Nissim, the focus, of course, is Hoidah. It's in the middle of Moedim. In benching, it's in Noedah. So when you're thanking the Rebbeinu Shleilam, what do we feel more gratitude for? More gratitude for a Ness that enables us to do a mitzvah, or more gratitude to a Ness when we're trying to fight a war and we're successful? So maybe the Hoidah is more the Rebbeinu Shleilam saved us from the Yevonim, and that's why we focus on that in Alan Nissim. Maybe it's the beginnings of the Teretz. But it can't be the full answer. Because that Gemara in Shabbos, which only mentions the Nes Hashem, and says that they were kever the Shmoyne Yomim, l'hoide yisur l'halal. So clearly, the gratitude, the expression of Hoidah and Halal, relates very much to the Nes Hashem as well. And after the Adlokas HaNeiris, which is the act of Pursumin Nissa that commemorates the Nes Hashem. And what do we say? So clearly, the Nes Hashemen very much relates to the Nes Milchama as well. So we have to see how the two relate to each other. And to do that, let's have a look at what the Yevonim actually did, what the Yevonim were about. And then we'll see that maybe we can understand what the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael was. So look at the Yevonim, and look at the Takana of Nes Chanukah. Both of these are obvious. I don't think I'll be mechadish any chidushim, but it is Chanukah, and it's a chance to rethink, to stop, to misbeinim about the inyonim of Chanukah, to approach them afresh, even though it's not mechudish, but just to hear the meaning of what we're talking about. In Moyes Tzur, we talk about the Yevonim, and we talk about what the Yevonim did to us. What do we say? Yevonim nigvitzu alai azai b'michashmanim. Two things. Uforutzu choymois migdolai, v'timu kol hashman. You know what they did, the Yevonim? They were pirates choymois migdolai. They breached the walls of my citadel. V'timu kol hashmanim. And they made all the oil impure. I don't know what you were taught in primary school, kindergarten. I mean, we learn Chanukah from a very young age. Often the impression is that the Yevonim came in and they just vandalized the whole place. They were just a bunch of vicious chevron. They came and they kicked everything around. And of course, what was going to break? Well, the glass bottles. If you're more aware, maybe the earthenware bottles. So that's why there was no oil left, because it had all been smashed up. And everything was like... But we know that the Gemara in Shabbos is very careful about what it describes. And the Gemara says, "Shenichnasu yivonim lehechol, timu kol hashmanim shebehechol." There was nothing wild, there was no carnage, there was no destruction as such. They weren't breaking anything. And the oil wasn't broken. Timu kol hashmanim. They went round and ensured that every bit of oil was tomei. And then we found one flask, b'chesom shel kohen gadol, and knew that that wasn't tomei. And then maybe we could use it for hadlaka. It wasn't broken. They weren't breaking things. They came in with a deliberate, careful, focused plan. The Bach brings a medrash that before the Yevonim entered the Beis HaMikdash, they were told, don't forget what the target is. Our target is the menorah. Because if Klal Yisrael have the menorah, then we're lost. They're looking for the menorah, and when they get there, it's not about breaking the menorah primarily. Maybe they took it. We see that they had to make a new menorah afterwards. But what were they focused on? Timu kol hashmanim shebehechol. They're going to be metamei the shmanim. That's what we say in Moed Tzur. The timu kol hashmanim. Well, if they're not smashing things down, then what's this portzu chimeis migdolai? So, of course, it refers to the Mishnah. The Mishnah in 2nd Perek of Middos tells us that when the Yevonim entered the Beis HaMikdosh, they discovered a wall called the Soirig. So it's not that high, it's 10 tefachim high. Soirig, a little wall called the Soirig around the Chayil. And this wall looked like a weave, and a crisscross. And when they got to this wall, they breached holes in this wall. The walls go all the way around, the walls. So the walls of the Soirig, they breached. How many gaps in the wall? They were careful again. It wasn't just random. 13 holes they made in this wall. Of course, after we got hold of Beis HaMikdash again and we got rid of the Yevonim, what do? We fixed the breaches, but that wasn't it. From then on, anyone who passed one of these fixed holes in the wall of the Soirig, they would be Mishtachave, Yud, Gimel, Hishtachavois. They were Mesakin, 13 places that you bow down. Whenever you meet one of these breaches, you bow down to the Rebbeinu. What is this telling us? Somehow, there's something called Yavon. When Yavon enters the Beis HaMikdosh, they don't break it, they don't destroy it, they don't mind the Beis HaMikdosh standing. They're not Bovel, they're not Edoim. There was no destruction of the Beis HaMikdosh. We lived in Eretz Yisrael, we had a Beis HaMikdosh, but they defile the Beis HaMikdosh. And what do? Primarily, there's lots of other stuff they did, but primarily, they breach the Seirik 13 times, and they metame all the Shmanim. And when we get back to the Beis HaMikdash and we want to overcome Yavon, what do? We're Mesakin Hishtachavor, bowing. What is the message of these 13 Pirutas? And why is the solution to this issue? Why is the refuah to this Makkah Hishtachavor? The Gaon says that the point, it's Yom Tov, that the point of the Soirig, which is not clear at all, the Rosh, which it's a need for this wall was, it was the point at which a goy couldn't enter. A goy could come into the Beis HaMikdash and daven. Shlomo HaMelech offered, he said in his tefillah, a goy could come and daven here, a goy could come and daven, but there was only you can only go this far. And the point at which a goy has to stop is the chayim. The Yevonim didn't mind the Beis HaMikdosh that goyim and Yidden can come to. But a Beis HaMikdosh that only Yidden can go into, does nisht. But why Yud Gimel Pirtzis? Why 13 and why Eshtachavo? The truth is that Menorah must be sadistic to understanding this milchama of Yavam. It's not just that they're going to attack the Menorah punkt, and that the Nes Hashem and punkt happens in Menorah. Could have happened in anything else. It could have been in the regiment to make a Nes afterwards. Could have been any Nes. It's not punkt that we ran out of oil, and that was the one problem we had. According to this Gemara, the Gemara is saying that the reason why we ran out of oil, because that was exactly the point of contention. When Yavon saw Beis HaMikdosh, they said, that's something we can't tolerate because it has a menorah that's lighting pure Shemen. As long as we're metame the Shemen, we can cope. If it's so, then the nitzochin of Klal Yisrael is going to be getting back the menorah. What is that? So we all know the famous medrash at the beginning of Baalei Yischol. Baalei Yischol Saneiros Aron HaKohen is told to light the menorah. And the medrash says, if you look at the previous Seder at Parshas Nosa, right, which we're laning every day, we talk about the Nisim bringing their korbanos, and every Shevet of the Shvatim, including Menashe and Ephraim, all but Shevet Levi, they have a Nosi, and the Nosi brings a korban. And Aaron HaKohen, for whatever reason, doesn't bring a korban, and he has Chalish Sadas, and he's disappointed. He feels he didn't have a chelik in the Chanukas HaMizbeach. And the Rebbein Shem says, don't worry, different nusach and different midrashim, but one of the midrashim says that the Rebbein Shem said to him, you're worried that you didn't have a part in this Chanukah Samizbeach. There'll be another Chanukah Samizbeach, and that Chanukah Samizbeach will be done by your Eniklach, Ad Yedei Kayanecho Akdoshim. So you'll have a chelik in that. And what will be special about that Chanukah Samizbeach? That there'll be Neiros. Somehow, the neiros are the essence of the Chanukah Samizbeach b'mei Chashmenoi. But there's another medrash Rabbah at the beginning of Baalei Yischol, that takes it further. And the nusach there, Peladiga medrash, well, we've all heard the answer, that's why we don't find it such a pella. But you look at the Mefarshei medrash, and they were mutering on this medrash. What does it mean? The medrash says, the Rebbein Shem said to Aaron HaKohen, you're disappointed that all the Nisim brought korbanos and you didn't. I'm going to give you something that's much better than korbanos. Why is it much better than korbanos? Because the korban, says the Rebbein Shem to Aaron HaKohen, the korban is limited. You can only bring a korban when you have a Beis HaMikdosh. And the Beis HaMikdosh won't last forever. So there'll be a time that there's no Beis HaMikdosh, like we have today. And when there's no Beis HaMikdosh, there's no korbanos. I'm going to give you something, Aaron HaKohen, that will last forever, even when there's no Beis HaMikdosh. That's korbanos. Korbanos of his man should be something to shkayim. Avol neirois. Neirois le'oilam. The neirois, the mitzvah of adlokas, neirois, lasts forever. Where? What? Where do you have neirois when you don't have Beis HaMikdosh? Do you ever hear anybody lighting the menorah when there's no Beis HaMikdosh? So the Eligah Ramban, Kiyodwain Chumash Ramban, the Embaloischa says, what it means is the neirois of Chanukah, that the Chashmonoim were mesakein, hadlokas haneirois. And it's just, it's unbelievable. It's an overwhelming chiddush. Because the Pasuk is talking about Baloischos HaNeiros, the mitzvah of Adlokas Neiros in Beis HaMikdosh. And the takon of the Chashmonoim, the tikkun of the Chashmonoim, is that we light the menorah in our homes, not in the Beis HaMikdosh, and it's not even a menorah. You don't even need a menorah. Yeshiva Bochum just use a few cups, like iron cups, with a bit of oil in. You don't need menorah. There's no menorah. There's no kohen. There's no Beis HaMikdosh. But it's hadlokas neiros. Mefurish and medrash and Ramban. That what we're being told is that our hadlokas neiros in our homes has within it some of the kedusha of hadlokas neiros hamenorah. And it's the nechama to Aaron HaKohen when he's told your mitzvah of hadlokas neiros ba'aloischos haneiros. That goes on le'olam. That will continue even when there's no Beis HaMikdosh, because that inyan of Adlokas HaNeiros will still exist in the homes of every one of Klal Yisrael when they light that menorah. Yesh meforshim that that's pshat in v'edliku neiros b'chatzreis kodshecha. Pasha Pshat, it's very, very difficult, because they've been into the Dvir, which is the Kiddush Kachim. Pinu es Seichalecho, it's the Heichom. Tiharu es Mikdoshechom, it's referred to the Azara. And then, Hidliku Neris Bechatzris Kachecho, come in, it's Rutsim, why would they light the Neris in the Chotze? Which Chotze? And it says Chatzrois. So some say that means that everyone in Yerushalayim, or whatever it's Yisrael, Hidliku Neris Bechatzris Kachecho, that refers to that. Menorah, in which case it is actually mentioned in the Alanisim. But either way, that the sugya here is Hadlokas Neiris is a chelik of the gilui of Mikdosh, Neiris Sheva Mikdosh, now in every Yiddish home. What does that represent? So the sugya, we all know, but it needs hispaininus. Very, very famous medrash. Maybe made famous by the Maral, he starts to say for a chodesh with this medrash, a medrash at the beginning of the Torah. And the medrash refers to the Dalet Golius. We know that there's four Golius that are anisht. There's four Golius. Bovel, Parasumodai, Bovel, Yovon, and Edwin. She's got Golus Bovel, understand? It's a Golus. Paros Hamodai, also a Golus. And then there's Golus Yovan, we'll get back to that, that's one we're dealing with, strange one. And finally, the Golus of Edrei, the one that we're in now. As Maral is Meirich, for a Golus to exist, for there to be the ability for a nation to overcome Klal Yisrael, there must be something in the Bria that allows for it, something that is ma'afshir that possibility. And for that to happen, there must be something at the roots of the Bria that has some sort of weakness. And that, says the Maral, is what the Medrash means when the Medrash says, if you look at the beginning of Bereishis, it says, not a particularly positive description of the state of the Bria. It means the Bria has within it potential for certain weakness, and every one of those four nations will access one of those weaknesses and use it to overcome Klal Yisrael. And the Medrash goes through, Toyu Voyu Pnei Tzohim Choshech Zu Yovan Shechshichu Einem Shel Yisrael. So Choshech refers to Yovan. Choshech, darkness. There's a Heorah that I'm sure everybody's thought about and heard, but it needs, I think, it's worth reconsidering. What do we mean when we talk about Choshech? Choshech is the opposite of Oyr. So what's this contrast between Oyr and Choshech? What does it represent? It's not about physical light and darkness, surely. It means conceptually there's light and darkness. What is that? We know the Pasuk in Koheles. What do we compare to light and dark? Yisrin ha-chochma min ha-sichlus. The advantage that wisdom has over foolishness is comparable to the advantage of light over darkness. You walk into a dark room and you can't find anything, you can't see anything, you don't know where things are, you don't know who's there, you don't know what you can achieve, you're incapable of achieving anything because you can't access things because it's dark. And then comes the light, then comes the oyr. And when there's light, just one little flicker of light, a small bedside light turns on. In the old days it was a candle. And when there's a little bit of light, all of a sudden, the whole room, and you gain perspective. You see what's what. You see where things are. And you're able to achieve things because you have the sense of clarity. Oyr is clarity, choshech is confusion. Wisdom, understanding, depth. That's Ur. Now, of all the Umus, who is least connected to Ur, to clarity, to depth, to understanding, to wisdom? If I had to guess between Bovel, Parasamodai, and Edoim, my personal guess would be
Shmuel.
Not one of the four. I would guess it would be Parasamodai. Because I'll tell you why, because when you think about wisdom, you think about trying to share something, you know there's two types of people you meet. There's some people you meet who are just not, they're just not connected to any thought process, any depth, any. They're just not such clever or deep intellectual people. you meet someone sometimes, and he's got a simple job, and there's no space for a deep conversation. Sometimes you meet somebody who's so involved in materialism, you can't talk about something meaningful to them that's not what interests them. And I think of Achashverosh, a man who is capable of running a party for 180 days. It wasn't a party, it was a mishteh. And the root of mishteh is shtir. Right, so it was a wine party. These people were drunk for 180 days. It's more shocking when you think about the fact that that means 6 months. 6 months. 6 months shikin in a shot. And it ends up with the story of Vashti. And you think, they grob. Choshech. Of course they live in Choshech. Because you can't talk to people when they're drunk, or when they're involved in their next party, when they're involved in Ilma Hazeh. Megushim digger people. But then you meet someone, a professor, and he's intellectual, and he's deep, and he's got a real understanding of things, and you can have a conversation with him. That person, he has light, he has clarity, he's enlightened, he's not in the dark. That's our haragosha. And if you do meet a professor like that, and you wonder, where did he get his chokhmah from? Where's the root of all the chokhmah bagoyim as we know it? Yavon. So we know Yavon is chokhmah. So how can you tell me that they have choshech? They're the dark ones. You can say they're the evil ones, they're the nasty ones, they're the cruel ones, they're the oppressive ones, they're the ones who are opposed to the kedusha of Klal Yisrael. But why dark? And we're told that, yeah, because the only way to attack chokhmah is with chokhmah. But what does that mean? What does that mean? How can you have chokhmah? So they have the wrong chokhmah, not enough chokhmah, but that surely still, that there's something that we have in common. They're chachamim, we're chachamim. They learn this topic, we learn that topic, lahavdil. But still, that should be choshech. The nekudah of the chayr is understanding what chokhmah represents, what the essence of chokhmah is. There's a very perplexing Mishnah. It's not just a Mishnah, though. Many of my Mori Chazal, Chaim Volozhin famously discusses them in Nefesh Chaim, but it's Mishnah that we all know. Im ein yira, ein chochma. If there's no yira shamayim, there's no chochma. Now, when you meet that Mishnah, and you really think about it, it's a bit strange. I mean, I'm not saying a person shouldn't have yira shamayim. It's very important. And you can even tell me that a person who learns Torah and doesn't have Yirah Shemayim, the Rebbe was not interested in that Torah. But don't tell me he doesn't have Chochmah. He has Chochmah, but he's a Shevet. Fine. So let's not get famished. Yeah? In Yiddish, it's in Oder Frum, Oder Klug. So somebody without Chochmah is Nish Klug. He's not clever. Somebody without Yirah, maybe Klug, but he's not Frum. How's that? Bad man. Lock him up. Don't like him. Dismiss him. Whatever you want, but don't tell me he's not a Chocham. What do you mean im ein yira ein chochma? Rishis chochma yiras Hashem. What do you mean rishis chochma yiras Hashem? You can tell me it's more important to have yira, or that you must have yira first, but it's not rishis chochma. As I'm sure Sharon, hein yiras Hashem yichochma yilabadu chochma. Pasuk says, v'achochma me'ayin timotze. Chochma is found from where there is nothing, where there is ayin. The essence of chochma is made of two words. The koyach of ma is the ability to ask ma. What is this? What is this about? What does this mean? What's the essence of something? And when you ask questions, you get into trouble. It's always like that. Because we have certain assumptions that make us comfortable. And when we challenge them, then we sense, we have to ask, what's it really about? There are many examples, endless examples in life, where we could ask ourselves questions that would make us uncomfortable. Maybe the question of all questions, what does Rabbi Shalom really want? A person who goes to davening three times a day could ask himself, ma, what was davening really meant to be? Is it the experience I'm going through? Or is it the way Chazal, the Rishonim, the Mefarshei HaTefillah describe it? Shulchan Aruch describes it. Ma, what is it? And that becomes a challenge, because you have to ask yourself what. And whenever you do that, a person asking a question, challenging themselves, is opening themselves to something that's beyond where they are today. It's M-A-I, and it's losing a little bit of my sense of ani. It's a willingness to recognize there's something beyond myself. That's the koyach of chochma. Im ein yiro, yiro doesn't just mean feel. Yiro means the awareness that I'm dependent on something deeper and greater than myself. That the meaning in my life may not be something I live with and experience on a day-to-day level. It's something beyond. Think about mitzvahs. The value of mitzvahs depends on how much koyach they have to metaken the neshama and bring the neshama to olam haba. That's not something I can feel and sense. I have no way of knowing which mitzvah is good, which mitzvah isn't. I have to work it out from the Torah. I can't feel when tefillin are kosher or not, when mitzvah is kosher or not. I don't get a special feeling when I do chesed correctly or kibud av aim. It's beyond me. There's something beyond. The ma challenges us to go beyond. That's the true koyach of chochma. And in ein yiro, if there's no yiro, ein chochma. It won't be the real koyach of chochma. Because chochma means to be able to ask truly and question your very existence, which is the middah of yiro. Yovam u'mechadish, a chochma without yiro. Their middah is the middah of as. They're not going to be affected by anyone above them. Whereas Ramban says in Chumash, the middah of Yovan, the attitude of Yovan is that which we can't feel, sense, appreciate, measure naturally with the human mind, anything that goes beyond the natural experience of the Seichel Enushi, of human understanding, doesn't exist. And we're not going to ask the question of Ma when it gets to that point. We're going to have a Koyach Ma that is within certain parameters, within the experience of Olam Hazeh. It's a koyach of ma misused. And what happens then is that you start joining the dots in the terms of Olam Hazeh. And the unifying fact of everything is the laws of nature and the reality of this world, without realizing that that's not where the dots join. They actually join to create a much bigger picture that relates to a world beyond this Olam, to a creator who holds the strings of the Shefa in Olam Hazeh and can intervene with Nes. That's the chiddush of Yovan, that they have chochma with azus, a chochma that doesn't have me'ayin, that doesn't have yiro. The chochma of Klal Yisrael is a chochma that is kulu shaykh to lamayru, shaykh to beyond. When we light the menorah and the menorah is keneged Torah, what we're saying is, although this is a ma'isa v'avodah, it brings Torah into the bria. There's a light that comes from beyond, a light that's ruchni, that's divine, that connects to Borei Olam, being mashpia to Olam Hazeh, and affects our entrance to Olam Habo. When one learns Torah that way, there's a sense of anova, a sense of chashivus. We start to realize how incredible it is that we can learn Torah and we're hearing the words of the Ribbono Shel Olam coming from Lamailo. We're learning in Olam Hazeh with Seich Lenushi, but we've opened our minds to Kedusha Ilo'a, to Kedusha beyond, and that brings the light from above. Shemen represents Chochm, the Gemara says. Oil represents wisdom. When oil is open, you can light the menorah on it. And that oil, that light, comes from above. It's a kedusha. There's a clarity that comes from beyond human experience. When you metame that shemen, when you block it, and it's tame, tumtum, covered, blocked, then you can light that menorah on it in your stam, shimish, it as a practical lamp, but you can't light the menorah with it. What Yovan wanted was light the menorah, but with shmonim tameim. We can respect religion. They did. You want a temple? By all means. But don't start telling me that there's a difference between your neshama and somebody else's neshama, because that means you're asking ma. If there's a difference between a yid and a goy can only go this far, and a yid can go further, that's threatening our ma. We have the unifying theory that holds everything together. We've got the gut, the grand unifying theory. You don't. And in that wall that separates Yidden and Goyim, we're going to make 13 piritzos, keneged, the gematria of Echod, because you don't have the Echod, we do. And our response is, we have the Echod, because what holds the whole Bria together is our Anova and Yira, and our awareness that there's a Borei above us. And how do you represent that? With ishtachavo. When we mishtachave, then we're able to have the chokhmah, that is chokhmah satira, the umas, the chokhmah of chokhmas yovon. So when we talk about vidlikun neiris b'chatzris kotshech, we're celebrating the fact that we got the menorah back. That's the essence of the melchamah with Yovan. When we have that, we have the hoidah that allows us to recognize that we're tali on Beira Olam. When we're tali on Beira Olam, then we're able to learn Torah with Yira. And that Torah is a Torah that touches the deepest point of Nishmas Yisrael and allows us to develop in all areas of Kedusha and Avodah, Shtak B'Zeichah, to have a truly lichtige Chanuk.
Association of Kates Nusayim Yumi Mipara Choylem Vehine Oymed Alay Oyer. I'll tell you one quick thought. Yesterday by Shir Shalyom we said, Eides Bi Yosef Sumo Yaleetz Mitzrayim Sfaslo Yudati Eshbo. Which loosely translates as Eides of a testimony Bi Yosef on Yosef with the extra hay. The Sumo Yaleetz Mitzrayim, it was placed on the land of Mitzrayim as a viceroy. Sfaslo Yudati Eshbo.
Language.
So now there are a few ways of explaining this particular memra, but the Medrash is easily explained by the distinction between Paris' dream and the way he related it to Yosef, because we know that the beginning of the sentence says, which means he was standing on the water, which is way beyond nature. How can a person stand on the water? But when he came to Yosef and he said to him, and Yosef, according to the Medrash, corrected him and said, Your Majesty, forgive me for interrupting, but you were not standing al sfasa oyer, you were actually standing al hay oyer. And if you're standing, whoa, Paris says, this guy, not only does he knows the pisa and achaloyim, but he knows also the details of the dream, and he's correcting me. And this was a testing point. That's why he said there, Eidis behi Yosef, what actually was the testimony that emplaced Yosef? Al eretz b'tzroi, tzfas, the word tzfas la yudati eshbo. I don't know this word Sfas. Yosef says that it wasn't al Sfas Ayoye, it was actually al Hay Ayoye, although I'm hearing from you, Eshmo, the word al Sfas Ayoye. And this is amazed Paro to the extent that it wasn't only the interpretation of the dream, but it was actually the relating of the dream itself. But there was a master which happened with by Sisur, one of the Ger Rebbes, and he went to visit a certain Dr. Rottenberg in old age home in Yerushalayim, the person that he went to visit was not there. So he went to another Ruv, who was once a Ruv in Tel Aviv, a big Tamtruchem, a Polish Yid. I don't remember his name offhand, but when he came in, he was very flattered that the Geri Rebbe came to visit him. And he sat down and he said, "No, the Rebbe Zugin Pesach was Pashas Miketz." So he said, "No, I didn't come to speak, I came to listen. What do you have to say?" So he says, "Oh, the Rebbe wants to hear, I'll tell you something, an interesting heura. When those dream interpreters came to Paroi, so there were a whole lot of hypotheses and various different interpretations. The Medrash says, Sheva Bunois atu moilet, Sheva Bunois atu koiva, you're going to have seven daughters, you're going to bury seven daughters, you're going to have seven wars on seven different fronts, you're going to lose the lot, and a whole range of different interpretations, and they didn't even enter Paro's ears. He could detect that there was untruth there, there was deceit. But they all came with their credentials, and when coming to Paro, they presented their business cards. So one was Abdul, a dream interpreter, qualified 40 years, studied in this and this university for interpretation of dreams. And the next one was Ahmud, and he was somebody who specializes in cows, and a whole range of different qualifications for this particular job. And they all said, "Ich bin der Beschein. I will, after Chaloyim Paroi, and Paroi listens, and Aran ein Euer, Naros im Zweiten," as I would say, it didn't begin to gel with him. Comes along Yosef. And Yosef says to him, "They say about you, Tishba Chaloyim Lifta Oysa, we heard from the Saramashkin, Saroifim, people in the hierarchy, that you are a man of profound intelligence and a great visionary. How is it possible that I had a dream like this?" And Yosef says to him, "Bil Udai, Elokim Yifta Es Shleim Par. I have got nothing to say. The maximum I can hope to achieve is that the Rebbein Shleim will endow me with the knowledge and the ability to interpret your dream, that it should be satisfactory to you." This word of Bil Udai is a great sense of humility that was conveyed. Now says this Ruf says to the Bais Yisrael, we can understand the few words in Tehillim which are associated, which the Medrash brings in a different context. Eidis b'hi Yosef Sumoy al Eretz Mitzrayim. What actually was this testimony that made Yosef really impress Paroi to such an extent, Sumoy al Eretz Mitzrayim, that he raised him and elevated him to the place of becoming eventually viceroy, and he was the last word after Paroi Raka Kiseg de Memeko? He says, "You know what? Because Svas lo yudati eshmo." This word, this language of lo yudati, I know absolutely nothing. Everything is elekim yire es shloim pare. And it's so different in contrast to the other predecessors before him that came along with their business cards, explaining their vast credentials in explaining dreams. He comes along a man and he says, "Svas, this language of lo yudati, I don't know, but I will try. With God's help, Eshmo, that's the one I want to hear. This is the man I really want to hear." The Bais Yisrael was very mishabayach. This word went back. He told a friend of mine, Leizer Rotenberg, that could have gone. He went to your uncle and you failed a gitvot, you missed a gitvot. So that was just as a fact. There's also very, very interesting heura at the beginning of the Seder. Normally, al pi dikduk, you would start a sentence by saying what actually happened. And then you would say that since the essence of the pusik is the dream, then it stands to reason that you would say, "Vayachloim Paro, that Paro would dreamt that Yosef was in the jail, because the most important part of the Pusik is to tell you what happened, and then to tell you the timing. Says the Briskerov that there's a Sibba and a Mesoivev. So you think that really it's got to do with the fact that Pari dreams, and this is the important part of it, that's the essence of the story. Says the Briskerov, no, you missed the point. The point is that Yosef has got to leave jail. And therefore, that is what is the important credential here. Since Yosef has to leave jail because it's at the conclusion of 2 years, it's therefore imperative that Paro has to dream. So it's not that Yosef left jail and that's that Paro dreamt and therefore he drew out Yosef out of jail. It's because Yosef's time had elapsed and now he had to leave jail. And therefore it says, the issue at the head of the Pusik is, now is the time where Yosef has to go and to leave jail. And therefore, that's why Pari had to have his dream right now. So you have to understand what's the Sibba and what's the Mesoivev. It's not that Pari had to, he has this dream and that, and therefore he took Yosef out as a result to interpret. But no, Yosef had to leave jail and therefore Pari dreamt. A knaich in understanding what the Pusik starts with. Let's just go to the Seder, and we'll continue from there.
Rami.
Yeah, there's a
very time.
Yeah, good chance. I'll continue from.
Check.
Okay. So it says like this. That there is a question which people ask. Why is it that when you're looking for a person, you've got altogether the question is, what prompted Yosef at this junction to suddenly give a Eitzah to Paroi on how to go about running the country in after the aftermath of the interpreting of the dreams? It says, "Va'atu yaira paro ishnu v'mechuchem." He's finished describing what the dreams were, and that the seven cows are 7 years, and the seven thin cows are 7 lean years. And he doesn't stop at this point. And then he says, "V'atu," after having said all that, "Yere paro ish nuvoim v'chuchom." And he goes on to say to him that you've got to have ability to see ahead and but what's this ish nuvoim v'chuchom? I mean, if you went to Price Waterhouse and you asked them for two top accountants to run a country and to start working out the dynamics and the economics of how to go about it, you got 7 years and you got 7 years ahead of that. You don't need for this ish nuvoim v'chuchom. You could have a league of top bookkeepers and accountants, people that understand figures and that understand economics. But the vote is also that the ish nuvoim v'chuchom is somebody who is able to have havuna. Havuna is usually meivin duvo mitoch duvo. We've witnessed in years in this country and in all across the world a world of bull markets and a world of bear markets, where the guys in the city can be driving around in Lamborghinis and Maseratis, as long as the hulach yailach, the things are good. And it's a proven fact that it goes up on the graph and goes down on the graph. People make it, people lose it. But the ability for those who are making it to put aside and to look towards the future, that it's not going to last. Around the corner, there are times you'll be out of a job. And you'll be scratching around for basic panusa. But no, this moment of time, we got it, we spend it, you got it, flaunt it, use it. Wall Street, Koichiv Oitzem, even though things turn downwards, and it's inevitable. when there was so much abundance of grain in Mitzrayim, that it was coming out of people's ears, there was so much food, there was a glut, so much of it. And now there's a guy up there at the top who's standing there in the position of king, and he's saying, put the grain away, every single bit of it. Build pits, dig them deep, prepare, work. Don't let anything go to waste. You say, you're crazy. There's tons of the stuff. What do you mean put it away? There's so much grain. You couldn't even eat it if you have the chance. He says, no, but I can see now how people are going to crawl around on their bellies with their tongues sticking out, starving of hunger. But not then. I can see it now. And that's the ability to have nuvoin, v'chocham, somebody who has ability to see ahead and to understand at the point when there is a bull market that the bear market is around the corner. And for that, you don't take people from Price Waterhouse, you have people with vision who are able to look ahead. And which brings us on to another interesting word, why it says va'atu. We could have just gone straight into it. However, there is a famous Mishnah that depicts the four Rosh Hashanim. On the 1st of Tishri, you've got the time where people go past, like we say in the Sana Tokev, and they go through Kivakuras, Roye, Edoy, Marve, Tzoyne, Tachas, Shiftoy, passing by, and each person is being examined and seeing where he is actually going to be in this coming year. Mi Yal, who is going to go up, Mi Shufel, Mi Yurim. And that happens on the 1st of Tisha. Now, there is also another Rosh Hashanah which has got to do with Tvir. And that has got to do with the time which usually happens Pesach time. And in Pesach, it's the Oilem is Nidain al Hatvur. We know from the Gemara that this dream that Paro had happened on the night of Rosh Hashanah. Because the Gemara says, B'Rosh Hashanah, Yutzu Yosef Mibaisu Asir. And now Yosef is explaining something else to Paro, that I am not just looking at the content of the dream, I'm also looking at the timing of the dream. And consequently, if that's the case, Va'atu Yaire Paroi Ish Nuvoim V'chochom is saying that there is something that we need to, how to say, explore with regards to the timing of this dream. Now, if all we were speaking about was the fact that you're dreaming about the sustenance of this country and that it'll be seven good years and seven bad years, so I can understand that my limitation as an interpreter would stop at this point. But it's more than that, because I'm trying to point out to you that there is also the timing that says that somebody is going to be elevated to a position of power. And it's not just about the dream, but if you were dreaming only about the sustenance of the country, that would have happened on Pesach, because the Olam is Nidoin al HaTavur on Pesach. But you didn't have the dream on Pesach. You had the dream on Rosh Hashanah, and you're a king who dreams for the world, or for your country. And if you are speaking about the dream happening on Rosh Hashanah, that's a time where we're speaking about the focus on people. And who is going to be Mi Yishufel, Mi Yurim, Mi Yeuni, Mi Yisasher? And that's very much to do with people and individuals. If that's the case, then the stress is on the word Va'atu. We asked the question, what got over Yosef to stand in and suddenly intercede and make remarks about what Paro should be doing and shouldn't be doing about Yaira Paro Ishlurma Vachuchem? You asked to interpret the dream, you've done so. You explained what the cows are about, the bad cows, the thin cows, the fat cows, the sheaves and the corns, you've done it. But what takes over you to start giving advice to Paro? Yaira Paro Ishluvam Bechucham Ishisayiretz Mitzrayim. So we now, according to the background of what we said, is Va'atu. The fact that this dream happened now, the Hainu, that the dream happened on Rosh Hashanah and it did not happen on Pesach, is a reason, therefore, that Yere Paroi Ish Nuvay Bechucham Ishisayiretz Mitzrayim is speaking about a person being elevated to a position of power. And that is why I go on to say to you that this is what you need to do right now and to appoint the right individual for this job. Which is what Paro saw the cue and he said, Ein Nuvoin Bechucham Kumoicho. I cannot see a more befitting person for this wise man who is able to look into the future more than you are. Let's go on into the Seder a little bit deeper. And speaker still not here? Okay. So it says like this. Right. There's an interesting Heura here when the Shvutim come down eventually to Mitzrayim. Stam, a nice knife there, because the first thing that Yosef attacked them and told them at the point of the encounter, when he said to them, Meraglim Atem, you are spies. There's a lot of interpretation who the Meraglim were when he was speaking about the descendants from each one. But on a simple pshat level, it's a very, very nice Heura. Yosef realized his brothers were intelligent people, very quick on the uptake, and it would not take them that long to ascertain that this man who is causing all this trouble and turmoil for them and for their family, it was sold down from another country. He worked for Potiphar and he was elevated to a place of power, and he's only been here Visra since his business with the dreams. And they start asking more questions, they'll start to cast doubt about the source of him, and maybe they might work back and find out that where did Potiphar buy him from? He bought him from Ishmaelim and so from Midian. Whoa! This might be the man that we're looking for. We came down to Mitzrayim because we had these conscience pangs about Yosef. Efshet stuck at him. But for this you start to make inquisitive questions and start to explore. Yosef recognized the possibility that this might happen. And as soon as he saw them, he said, Meraglim Atem, you're spies! And everybody around was there when the accusation was given. And once your accusation is cast, Yosef thought to himself, now go down into the street and start asking questions about me. I've just accused you of being spies. It's very unlikely that you're going to ask, hey, by the way, this guy at the top, who is he? Where does he come from? Do you know anything more about his background? So he said, right, now I've closed your mouth completely. I accused you of being spies, and at this point, it's unlikely that you're going to start causing any further trouble. So, we go to the fact that Yosef HaTzadik sits them down to a meal at one stage, and it says there, Vayishtu Vayishku Imoy. I can't find it right now inside the Pusik, but essentially the Pusik is saying that they drank and they became shikha and intoxicated with him. Rashi says at this point that they Me'oisa Hayoim Reshusi, that they, once they sold Yosef, they never drank from that day onwards, and at this particular occasion they did allow themselves to drink. Question is, what actually happened here? And what was the reason that they allowed themselves to drink? So the one mahalach is that really you can't imagine that the shvutim, the shiftikah, allowed themselves to be intoxicated. But in the same way that some people say about Noach, that he was also intoxicated because once the mabul had passed, nature changed, and he had been without wine for so long, So therefore, even a small glizzle of a l'chaim already made him tipsy, but not that he actually drunk, how do you say, copious amounts of alcohol to bring himself to that. They also had passed so many years since Yosef Tzadik was sold, and at that point they made up their mind that they are not drinking any more wine. And now they drank a small amount of wine, it sent them to a place of intoxication. But more importantly, is the fact, Vayishtu Vayishkiri Imoy, that why did they stop drinking at that point? Because, essentially, although the Mahalchim of the Rishonim were very comfortable with the decision, but in retrospect they realized that it was Vayisni Oisoi, that there was an element of jealousy prevalent amongst them. And with that mass of kinna, that middle of kinna, there was a matzah where their close brother was sold into slavery and went down to Mitzrayim. Having established that, they realized that this middah has got to be worked on, and they did so. At which point did they know that they had already conquered that middah? Because when Yosef sat them down around the table and he lavished extra care, extra love, and excessive affection towards Binyamin, then they would have re-aroused here this jealousy that came for the children of Rucha Lemeni. It was Yosef which was in the first place, and he was the blue-eyed boy with the Ksoides Pasim, which aroused Vayakani Boy Echov in the very first place. And yet here again comes this man, this Viseroy, and he takes the singular boy. He was so bent and determined to get this young boy down to Mitzrayim, and he got him there. Now look at all this affection that he's lavishing on him, and he's giving him so much more than everybody else, and he sits him next to him. And yet they felt that there was no arousal of jealousy within them. Then they reckoned and recognized that this middah of kinna they worked on for so long, but Baruch Hashem, they managed to eradicate it within themselves. And they said, if so, that's a cause for celebration. Vayishtu vayishkiri imoy. Now at this point, we can celebrate. We have been mevatel that middah deep inside us of Vayakani Boy Echov, and we can sit back and we can rejoice.
You know why I called him a spy?
Yeah.
with Shabbos one.
Shabbos, for Shabbos.
Well, that's had 10 minutes talking to the drummer. He is trying to have that one. What's he like when he's prepared? I don't know that. I've lots of time.